Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. It's hard to believe it was only a year ago Coburg Council received the final report for the Cultural Master Plan. It marked a significant milestone for the local arts community as the town sought to create a vision for the creative community. In its final report, the consultants noted 95% of those surveyed identified arts and culture as important. The pandemic has seriously hit the arts and culture community hard, as it has so many aspects of our lives. A survey by the Ontario Arts Council said arts organizations and artists lost a combined total of $128 million in revenue between March and June. A whopping 94% of arts groups said they canceled events or postponed activities. A similar study done by the Canada Arts Council found 42% of individual artists said they would need to apply for a Canada Emergency Response Benefit in order to make ends meet. In the midst of all this, there are examples of resiliency. With the Stage 3 reopening of the Ontario economy, museums and art galleries are allowed to open with new protocols and safety requirements in place. Bars and performance venues are also allowed to book acts and events following strict guidelines. Today's show looks at the impact of the pandemic on the local arts. First, there is a conversation with well-known musician Cale Crow, who is a fixture in the local music scene. He will talk about how he has survived the pandemic, its effect on his songwriting, and his return to making a living through his music. In the second segment, Olinda Casimiro, the executive director of the Art Gallery of Northumberland, will talk about the role of fine arts during a time of crisis. She will also share the successes and the challenges of the gallery, both during the pandemic and as it prepares to reopen into the new reality. So let's begin with my conversation with local musician Cale Crow. I am so pleased to have with me today Cale Crow, a well-known local musician. He plays regularly within Northumberland, but also has performed elsewhere in Canada and the United States. Welcome to Consider This, Cale.
Thank you very much for having me.
So I wanted to talk to you today about what it's like to be a musician during the pandemic. So let's start off with, how has the pandemic impacted you as a performing musician?
Well, I think it probably goes without saying that without the ability to enter any sort of public space for, the past 4 months, it was, everything sort of ground to a halt all at once. I think the last actual gig that I played was prior to, the easing of restrictions. The last gig that I played was probably March 11th, I think. And I played in Campbellford, and there were people in the audience trying to convince each other that COVID-19 was just another flu, and saying that, we'd only be shut down for about 2 weeks or so before everyone realized that it wasn't a big deal. And, here we are now. And I think I played my first gig a week ago at in someone's backyard with like less than 10 people, which was very surreal. So, it was sort of weird. I said to my partner, I told her I wanted an extended break back in February, and it kind of felt like the universe obliged a little.
That's really interesting, because you had been very, very busy up until that moment. Can you give us an idea of just how busy you were before this happened?
Well, my goal typically annually is about 100 or so performances in a year. And I hit it at least 2 or 3 years in a row prior to this. And I have a spreadsheet that I use to track all of my performances, and you know, I looked at it not even maybe a month ago to start editing it, because I was starting to, you know, I was starting to consider what the next, you know, 4 or 5 months might look like. And there was I felt like my hair was going a little gray looking at it, but there was thousands of dollars that I was having to walk away from, not by choice, but and now it's really interesting. The restrictions have been eased up, and I actually have no available weekends in August after like not even 2 weeks of restrictions being eased up. So people just immediately flocked to my email asking me to play private events outside their bars, on their patios and stuff like that. So you can really tell that people missed it.
That's really interesting. I'd like to come back to that in a bit, but can you tell us, when you're looking back, can you recall when you started to get a sense that this was going to affect your livelihood, and tell us about how you reacted to that?
So I pretty much went full doomsday mode mentally. In the beginning, when they said that they were going to shut down for 2 weeks back in March, I was like, okay, you know, I had maybe 4 or 5 gigs at the time canceled. And, you know, that wasn't a big deal to me. Like I've had to cancel things for sickness and family emergencies and other things like that. So that wasn't really that big of a deal, but you know, you get about halfway through that and realize that, oh, in actuality, they're not going to keep it only 2 weeks, and that they're just going to keep extending it and extending it.
So what strategies did you come up with in terms of your music during the crisis? You did perform, although not as we would have expected.
Yeah, so I started making that move to perform in the digital space, not quite as immediately as some other people. I know a lot of musicians that were already prepared for the idea of doing live streams. I had done live streams of my performances in bars before, which was okay. Just, you know, it didn't have the same feeling, obviously, because you could hear people talking over everything, which was super annoying. But I honestly didn't even know if I would be able to do it, because I never know how strong my internet connection is going to be, right? So, but I talked to my folks about it, and they were willing to offer their garage space, which is where a lot of the live streams that I've done take place. And so I was able to set up a bit of a stage and you know, have my laptop on the one side, and so that I can engage with people in the comments.
It's interesting how that technology works. What was the experience like to perform through that platform, as compared to, say, when you're doing recording or when you're performing live?
Yeah, it's super weird, or it was super weird in the beginning, because, you know, I never performed. Well, I technically, when I was doing it here in this office, I did perform without an audience, and that just really feels kind of like a dress rehearsal of those shows. But when I performed up at my parents' garage, they were always sitting in the room, and so at least I knew that there was someone receiving it in person. Whereas there is no room for applause in a visual, you know, in a visual format, right? So I'd have to check the comments just to see people putting little hand clap emojis in. And the other thing too is that anytime you do something on, at least anytime I was doing something on the live streams, there's at least an 8 to 15 second delay. And so I would say something, maybe make a quick joke, and then I'd go into the next song and then they'd start laughing about it or like reacting to it in some way. So that was really weird. It's kind of like if you were a stand-up comedian and you made a joke in a room full of people and no one laughed for the first 15 seconds of that joke. So yeah, it was really interesting and a really, like, there was a bit of a learning curve trying to learn how to navigate that, that social dynamic between you and like between the artist and the audience, just because it's an entirely different format than in person. I definitely, like, it's good to know that I have that in my back pocket now, because all the science is saying that we are eventually going to experience a second wave of this. And if it hits as hard as it did, or, you know, heaven forbid, harder, it's good to know that I at least have the skill set in order to accommodate for that distance and that isolation again. So
it's really interesting, though. I mean, that you talk a lot about live performing versus performing live on a different platform. How is it compared to, say, studio recording? I mean, in studio recording, you know, you're pretty much on your own. You have a few other people, but yeah, it must be different.
Funny. It's funny. I'm actually in the studio right now up in up at Newcomb in Harwood, and it's funny because it's just me and Adam on, you know, any session that we're doing. But the other thing too, like with any live performance, is that you don't get to redo. And if you do get to redo, everyone knows your mistake. Like if you mess up in a live stream, not only if you you know, if I'm playing at on a patio or in a club or whatever, and I mess up, we'll all hopefully laugh about it as the audience, and then I can, you know, start back up again and do it right. I haven't had to do that probably more than, like, I don't know, 4 or 5 times in the past like decade. But if I mess up on a live stream, that is recorded because I end up posting it as a like an on-demand video after the fact. And so if I mess up during a live stream, that is then permanent in like my catalog of videos on my music page. So it's there is a bit more pressure in that regard, but when I do it, I tend to just sort of I'm at the point now where I don't take myself seriously enough for it to be a huge issue. So I just kind of laugh it off and keep going. And, you know, I'll end up getting comments like 4 or 5 days later from people who weren't able to watch it live, commenting on it and, you know, joking about it or whatever. But yeah, it's also a matter of, you know, when I'm in the studio, it's a very calm, you know, relaxed vibe. Whereas if I'm performing on a live stream, it's, you know, you are still very much putting on a show. So there is still a pressure to keep people entertained. Cause like I've done show like live streams where if I'm playing a song that people don't necessarily know, or a song that isn't very necessarily very upbeat, engaging, exciting, things like that, I can watch the view count rise or plummet live, and I constantly know how many people are watching at one given moment. So there is a bit more pressure, whereas, you know, in person, it's just like, okay, if I'm playing at a bar and you're not really that interested, you're still sitting there having a beer or whatever, but it's not like you stand up and walk out of the room just because you're not that interested in the music, right? So
how has the pandemic impacted your creativity? I mean, have you written any songs during the pandemic?
Yeah, actually, I wrote a song about maybe a month in, sometime in mid-April. I wrote a song called Outshine, and I picked some pieces that I had already written and kind of put it together. And it's sort of about, in the verses, it's kind of about, sort of a nostalgia for the way that things were. You know, I like the very first line in that song is "Take me back to evenings I won't," or "Take me back to evenings I will not forget." Which, you know, I'm writing about my time living in Oshawa and being able to drive around at night with my friends and stuff like that. But in the chorus, I read a line somewhere, when this all first started that said, because a lot of people were like super terrified of catching this thing and dying right out the gate. But I read this thing, somewhere, and I can't remember where I read it, but it said that you are going to witness every single day of your life except one. And I like that just really resonated with me. So the first line of that chorus is "you're going to see every day but one." And it's just sort of like, you know, the message behind it is sort of like, yes, this sucks. And yes, everything prior to this was probably better than this, but we are going to get through it. And, you know, every valley returns to a peak, so to speak. So like, you know, it will get better, and this too shall pass kind of thing was sort of the bulk of the message. So, and I'm hoping to have that song out, probably end of this year, beginning of next. So that'll be something to look out for.
Interesting. In your optimism, do you see us returning to a normal, or is it a new normal, or are we facing a new reality?
I think I kind of flip back and forth on it, honestly. Just I think we will get to a normal, but there will be aspects of it that are, you know, like, suppose we get to a point tomorrow where Oxford University comes out and says, hey, we've been approved to start vaccinating people with this, and everyone gets vaccinated and it's totally cool. Awesome. Great. But look how blindsided we were as a species by this, and look how easily that was my big fear when this all went down. Like, is that, and I've had this, it's almost like a trauma response, to, you know, like sudden deaths in my family and things like that. The fear is that these things can just happen, right? Like, this sort of thing can just happen completely off, like out of left field, and in what, a matter of weeks, the whole, like, all our borders were shut down, everything was, like, all businesses were shut down, economies grinding to a halt. So like, it might not be COVID-19 forever, but the fact that it was COVID-19 and everything happened so quickly, it's just a reminder that these things can just happen at any time, and that you need to be aware of that fact. So I think we will definitely see a normal eventually, but it won't be the normal that previous generations had, I guess. You know, like, I think everyone compares COVID-19 to the 1918 Spanish flu. And, you know, I can't tell you how many photos, old time photos I've seen of people in all sorts of masks and face coverings and things like that. And that was the normal for what, like 2 years, 3 years for them, until, like, at least in America, until sort of herd immunity kind of took over, or, you know, enough people had got it and gotten sick and recovered or died or whatever. But yeah, that, like, it's not going to be note for note the very exact same normal. Like, you're not going to just be able to be, you know, all hugging buddy with your friends right off the gate as soon as everything's vaccinated, and who knows when we're going to see a vaccine. So you know, it's definitely not going to be the same.
So you get a sense of the fragility of the world, eh?
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, and I think that this is a huge thing that's happening, especially to our neighbors to the south, is, you know, we're seeing how ignorant people are to their fragility and their mortality and things like that, you know, and, you know, we could all be back to being hunkered down in our basements for who knows how long at, you know, the drop of a hat if this all goes wrong. So
how does that affect your feelings about performing then?
My dad and I built this plexiglass shield that I've been using at my gigs, which doesn't necessarily I fully believe that it's doing the job of shielding others from me, which is really like when you see people wearing face masks, and this is the thing that I don't understand how hard this is for people to understand. But when you wear a mask, it's not for you, right? It's for the people around you in the event that you are sick. So when I use my plexiglass shield, it's so that people aren't like, so that droplets from me singing, which by the way, singing apparently, I didn't know this until a couple of weeks ago, but apparently singing can project droplets of saliva and things that may have COVID-19 up as far as 15 feet away from the singer. So I play mostly in my gigs next month are mostly in the Peterborough area, and everyone has been like super understanding and accommodating of the fact that I don't want to be super close to anybody, even if I'm like chatting with people after a gig or you know, talking to any of the staff before.
As our society deals with the pandemic, what do you see as the role for arts and artists?
Oh, this is a good one. I'm not sure if you saw there was an article, or there was like an infographic in one of the Toronto newspapers that was like the top five most and least essential businesses during the pandemic, and the number one least essential was obviously artists. Like that was what they deemed to be the job that was like, yeah, we don't care if this comes back for months and months and months. And anytime I talk to people who you know, talk smack about the arts during all of this, and like, you know, because I've had people who are like, oh, like, you know, you're just an entertainer, why are you so desperate to get back to work or whatever? And it's like, well, I hope that during this pandemic you didn't go on your computer. I hope you didn't access Netflix or Disney Plus or any of these streaming services. I hope you never turned on your Spotify or your iTunes or your you know, access your vinyl collection while you're doing all this, because I know personally that without the arts, I would be in a much worse position during all of this than I actually was. I am super privileged to have had the experience during all of this that I did. So I don't think people understand how important it is to have art and like understand the forms of art that exist in the household. And I got messages all the time from people who were recurring viewers in my live streams saying like, we formed sort of a family tradition during all of this, where I had one viewer who told me, she said, we would have my kids home and we would all have dinner. And then after dinner, I'd put your stream on TV, like, you know, projected onto whatever TV they have in their living room. And we'd all just sit and listen to you play. And that was like, that was a really interesting like moment where I was like, oh, now I'm a part of your day, or like a part of your week or whatever, during all of this, and it's like there's a whole different culture that's happening. And I'm not, like, to be clear, I'm not saying in any way that what I do is even remotely on par with grocery store workers, truck drivers, you know, delivery people. I'm not saying that at all, but I am saying, you know, I'm not saying it's up at the top, but certainly take it off the bottom. But yeah, I definitely think there needs to be, going forward, there definitely needs to be some sort of mindset shift, I guess.
Gail Crow, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more from Consider This.